When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Welcome you to Porch Talk. This is your host, Alan. This is a special episode. I was recently on the County Line podcast. That is Mr. Lee Smith's podcast. Co-host with him is Ethan. Daniel Sharp invited me down to Philadelphia for the weekend. We would go on this podcast, and later that evening, we would play a show on at the Neshoba County Fairgrounds on Daniel's porch. If you would, go to countylinepodcast.com, rate and review the show. They're on Apple and Podcasts. Rate and review this one if you haven't. Thanks so much, and here's the show.
Rolling on my end.
All right, here we go.
Let us pause in life's pleasures and count its many tears. While we all suck sorrow with the poor, there's a song that will linger forever through our years. Oh, hard times come again no more. 'Tis a song, the sigh of the weary. Hard times come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Oh, hard times come again no more. While we seek mirth and beauty and music light and gay, there are frail forms fainting at the door. Though their voices are silent, their pleading looks will say, oh, hard times come again no more. 'Tis the song, the sigh of the weary. Hard times come again no more. Many days we have lingered all around our cabin's door. Oh, hard times come again no more. 'Tis the song, the sigh of the weary. Fair times, come again once more. Many days we've all lingered around these cabin doors. Oh, fair times, come again once more. Oh, fair times, come again once more. Oh, fair times, come again once more. Oh, fair times, come again once more.
Welcome back, Mr. Daniel Sharp.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be back here.
We've also got Alan Aldridge here with us.
How goes it? It's a pleasure to be here.
Good to have you, man. Good to have you.
Yeah, man.
Glad to have you.
I'm going to readjust my mic real quick.
Absolutely. So that song, Daniel, was it your intention for it to be applicable to someone who doesn't even know about the Neshoba County Fair? Because it very well could apply to any human.
Yeah, absolutely. It was not my intention for it to be really anything like that, but... This is a public domain song.
Oh, is it?
And I reworked quite a few of the words in it in many places where I have marks, and including I put the Fair Times part on the end there, which directly speaks to the Neshoba County Fair.
Right, right.
And but yes, this song is works on a whole lot of levels, and it just happened to work on the level of the fair, and it pretty much said a whole lot about it, you know, about getting ready for the fair and lingering around the cabins and cabin doors, and fair times come again once more. We're ready, you know. It's a song we sing for the weary.
Absolutely. Alan, you good? Good to go?
Yeah, I'm in there.
All right, so Alan's been here with us as well, recording and getting that performance captured by Daniel Sharp. So we're getting the technical aspects worked out, but I think we're almost there. We've also got Ethan Carter. Some might know him as LaMichael Sam Carter James III, a very evangelical Christian he is. And he is joining us today as well. So glad to have all of y'all with us here at the County Line. I'm thoroughly looking forward to talking with y'all, getting some perspective and also some insight and information, Daniel, for you specifically, behind some of what the things you've got shaking and moving in the music world, in your music world. And Alan, learn a lot about, you know, your history as a podcaster and mm-hmm. the origin story behind that. We talked briefly about it last night.
Yeah.
So got a lot of things to cover. And then, Mr. LaMichael, we will touch on your creative process as well. If you would so choose to bless us with your knowledge.
I will. Good to have me.
Yes. Stay up. Stay up to that mic.
No. Yeah,
because you got the old schools.
Well, if you don't mind, let me first touch on Mr. Daniel Sharp here and the performance he just put on. Let's tip of the cap to him. He never lacks short of the soul he puts in there, and I sure do appreciate it. And it's good to see you. It's nice to meet you.
I'm about to take a dump up in here.
Well, that's what we're looking for. Just so long as you brought air freshener. Just so long as you brought air freshener.
All right.
If you and we don't need none of that that school toilet paper.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna keep that.
You gotta bring the Charmin. You gotta bring the Charmin out.
We just go towel if we gotta go that route.
Get on up there on her now.
There's a story behind that.
Hey, move that. Tilt that back if you need to. There you go, if you need to.
I don't know if you want to share the...
No, I'm going to leave you hanging.
That's fair.
Let's just let it stand.
Okay. As it stands is how it is. I'm going to take a dump up in here.
The score's been settled. Daniel, what you got going as far as your music career and aspirations and projections go?
In other words, what am I doing now?
Yeah. No, I was about to say, for those who heard the first episode, they've got a little bit of a backstory. But those that may have not, give them an update on some of the things you got going.
All right, it's like this. I'm creating music. I'm writing music. I'm playing music. I'm doing that. And as far as getting it into a fixed format, you know, I do have a project going with a friend that's an engineer, and we probably got 12 or 13 songs finished, but I got a whole bunch more. We're trying to wrap that up, and so musically speaking, for me, I'm just creating art, and I haven't played a whole lot live. I had the privilege of playing at Allen's Porch Fest a couple months ago, and I play locally, you know. I get little gigs here and there, you know, get invitations, and I take a lot of those, and most people got a lot more to say, but you know, in the last few years I've really been behind the wire, so to speak, my own wire at my island, and so I do that, and I create, and I just try to keep it steady and get life out of every breath.
Yeah, that's a very good approach. I try to do the same thing. Sometimes easier said than done, to be able to stay focused on that, you know, making sure that we utilize every breath that we have in the most effective way possible, you know. But I think having an outlet like music, I would imagine, is a avenue for you to be able to go down that road and really recognize enjoying every breath that you have, because you enjoy doing that thing so much. Is that fair to say?
It absolutely is. And it's enjoyment and, you know, for me, and I don't know about other musicians, but I kind of do. It's something that you do because you have to, you know, pretty much. I mean, you need to. Have to is not a good way to put it, because you need to,
mm-hmm.
to do this, to fulfill whatever the thing is in all of us that seems to need fulfilling to give our lives purpose, meaning, and forward motion. And, you know, you see people not doing something, and they're just, you go, well, they're not doing nothing. Maybe it's just because they're not doing what they are really meant to do, or what at least they're meant to do it for their own soul anyway. So, so I'm doing my art because I need to, and it's always been that way. And, you know, many of the other parts of a conventional life fall to that. So I'm no exception to the rule. But to in the situation I'm in, you know, my life, how it is, to be able to create, write, play, record my art, you know, most of the time is a real blessing, you know, to use that word. If you want to use it, you know, the universe has blessed me with the opportunity. And for most of my life, I have had the opportunity to do music. And, you know, I paint and I write fiction and I do all kinds of other things, but music is the primary thing. And so what I'm specifically doing about my music is, you know, I've got some trademark stuff going, and I've got some internet stuff that I'm working with, and some places I want to put the music. And this is all new music I'm talking about, but also, you know, me and David Lauderdale had several CDs, several records, and I'm looking at getting all that content out and available for whatever, you know, whoever wants to hear it, buy it, whatever.
And when will that occur? Do you know? Yeah.
That's the thing. That could happen any day, because all that work's done with me and David, and I've got it. All I got to do is put it up. So, you know, why don't I do it? I know sometimes I'm playing guitar and writing songs instead of doing that, and other times I'm hoeing tomatoes.
You see what I'm saying? What I was telling Stu before he left about him and Daniel's stage in their music career right now is very similar.
Very similar. And I will say, I just to add what you were talking about, you know, performing live earlier, the public did a disservice with that, because we miss you and you put on a hell of a live show. And for the people who have not seen Mr. Daniel Sharp out there,
thank you.
Hey, my man, and you can get him fired up too. You can get him getting down in there now. You can egg him on. He'll let it rip.
You told a story about the first time you saw, at least you saw me and David as All Around Hounds at a particular place earlier before the mics were hot. And I said, yeah, I remember that show. It was happened to be one of those private shows that, and it just happened like that afternoon, you know, we got the call and stuff. It was a little shed, like a rusted tin top shed behind us with, you know, perfect. I mean, just perfect. We threw the PA right in front of it. There was power there, you know. I don't remember if it was probably not a generator. I don't know. We played through tons of generators, but yeah. But that show had a lot of highlights. Still haven't said where it's at, but that's okay, because some things need to remain a mystery.
That's right.
The live shows, have you picked that back up?
Not really. I mean, I've talked about picking it back up.
Yeah, can I ask you, how much, like, when you're performing live, how much does that, the fans' interaction, like, you know, them rooting you on type thing, or influence your performance?
It 100% influences the entire show, depending on the audience participation or the lack of participation.
Like, if you know somebody's bought in, it's got to be an awesome feeling. Like, if you know,
if someone, I see that someone, anyone, it can be one, is really interested in it and really listening and appreciating, the show will go up 10 levels immediately. And the selections of songs will change completely.
Whole different vibe.
Yep.
I would imagine, having never performed anything other than sports, I would imagine feedback from the crowd definitely determines where you're going to go with the set list, where you're going to go with what songs you perform. There may be different quirks or things that you put into a performance in certain situations when you have certain crowds that you may not necessarily do when you have a crowd on the opposite end of the spectrum. So that's an interesting dynamic. I hear comics talk about that a lot, about how, you know, the personality of the crowd as a collective sometimes indicates what material they'll throw out there depending upon how the crowd reacts to what it is that they're saying. Do you experience that, Alan?
And just imagine, like, just with a comic, a heckler, that's a really good thing for them sometimes. It can be for their worse or it can be for their better, because a lot of times they'll be able to play a couple of jokes off that heckler, mm-hmm. like Andrew Schultz. Like, some of his best routine clips on YouTube is because someone heckled. And he owned that moment. With a live performance, I write a lot of folk music like Daniel, uh-huh. and I'm also in a band called Cosmic Gravy. And we're like a bluesy rock jam band. And so there's a lot of folks getting out there and shaking their ass, having a good time.
Right, as they should.
Yeah. And so that really fuels what I'm doing with that band. When I see that, I know I'm doing my job. On a solo set, just me by myself and my guitar, sometimes, man, I want an intimate room. Playing outside in the outside venue, it can be really difficult because it's kind of hard to gauge that room, that vibe. If it's an intimate setting, I'm in control.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Where are you and your band based out of from?
So Cosmic Gravy is Matt Mason and I are in Starkville. Mm-hmm. Philip Saville is here in Philadelphia. And we have Mr. Hunter Burrell fronting it, and he is out of Lauderdale.
Lauderdale, Mississippi?
That's right.
Look at there. How'd y'all come together?
So through my podcast, I met Philip Saville. I reached out to him on social media, invited him on my show, and I drove to his house here in Philadelphia. We sat down. We hit it off. About a month or two down the road, I get a message from him asking him if I'd play bass for him in his blues band, Groove Johnson. We did. So me, Matt, and Philip are Groove Johnson, and then Cosmic Gravy is you add Hunter.
Uh-huh.
And they had already had Cosmic Gravy going a little bit after Groove Johnson, and they had another bassist, but it wasn't really working out for him.
Mm-hmm.
So when it was time for him to move on, they asked me to come be a part of it.
I see.
So now you have like a Cosmic Gravy, Groove Johnson. It's a little special little thing.
Do y'all perform often?
Yeah, we're on a tour right now. So next Saturday we'll be in Natchez at Natchez Brewing. And then the following weekend will be in Ocean Springs.
What led you to starting the podcast? And let people know what it is, what the name of it is, and where they can find it. I guess it's on all platforms.
Oh, absolutely. Spotify, Apple. I have a couple of my video interviews that I've done over Skype on YouTube. You can look my name up, Alan Aldridge, or Porch Talk. The logo is my face in neon, and I'm wearing these aviators. And it says Porch Talk on the shades.
I saw it this morning. I looked at it.
Yeah. And so just the origin of it, I had lived out on the coast in Mobile for 7 years. And I was studying at the University of Mobile, intercultural studies, like missions. I was really into missions at the time. I finished up that degree. I was married. And everything was going great. We were preparing. I was getting my master's from mission work. I was studying translation. And my home life fell apart. My wife left. And so the ministries that I was planning to work with didn't want to work with me anymore because of that reason. And so I fought for about 6 months down there in Mobile, was making it, was having a real hard time. Now, my grandmother was having a real hard time with losing her husband. And the last time I went home, about 2 weeks later, I would move back because I wanted to be with her and try to keep her alive. And so I moved back to my hometown in Kennedy, and I was catching up with guys I hadn't seen in 7 years. Similar to this, we would be on a porch, someone would have a guitar, and we would talk about just something real. And I thought we had something. So a podcast was born. We'd play a little music, we'd have a little talk, and then we'd play one more song.
Did you have any aspirations prior to that point in your life of creating a podcast or doing any form of audio production outside of music?
No. And Porch Talk has grown because I never thought it was going to get off my porch. And then people started listening to the show. and they would send a Facebook message or just a DM on some social media, have you heard of so-and-so? So I started, like, my first off-the-porch interview, I interviewed a guy named Colin Krieger, huge real estate guy. And then through our conversation and the interview, he realized that I was a music fanatic. And he was like, do you know Jamie Nettles? She runs a house show called the Sunstroke House right in downtown Columbus.
Mississippi.
A gym.
What's it called?
The Sunstroke House.
I used to live in Columbus.
Yeah, and it's right downtown with all those antebellum homes. And she was having this talent from all over the nation that had no business in Columbus. And she was having them come into Columbus. I'm talking like Sean James, if you're familiar, of Erica Winnestrom of the Heartless Bastards, of she's had, it was kind of ironic because they're divorced now, but the Civil War.
Yeah, I know you're talking
about. Wars.
She had the man, I can't think of his name's John, is that right? I can't think of his name right now. Anyway, he's a Grammy winner.
He's looking at me. You can't see this on the radio, but I can't remember either, so I'm just not saying it.
Yeah, but anyway.
I thought about lying, I'm like, no, that's not
she had a, he's a Grammy winner. She had front. A Grammy winner play at her house, you know, and so I stepped in there, interviewed her. And then I started interviewing these musicians, and then the podcast started to kind of turn into a music podcast where I would travel to the musician's house, sit down with them in their living room, our porch, and we would talk about them, their music, and how music got into their life.
So you put out 2 episodes a week?
Mm-hmm. Tuesdays and Thursdays most of the time. That's right.
Do you do it in a seasonal format, or is it just perpetual, Tuesday, Thursday?
Perpetual.
Yeah. That's you're the first person I've met in my general vicinity, proximity, that has an independent podcast. And I'm grateful to Daniel for linking us up because it's good to have peers, regardless of what industry it is, regardless of what the endeavor is, to be able to have someone to bounce ideas off of, to have someone to look to for as an encouragement, because you understand the goal of podcasting and having things in conversation format and audio and all those different things. But for lack of a better phrase and a better way to put it, it helps in the loneliness of the pursuit.
Yeah, sure.
Because you know somebody else is out there that recognizes what you recognize generally and that they're after a similar goal. It builds momentum for the group of people as a whole that are trying to podcast or play music or play sports or whatever. When you have that connectivity and that network, it's encouraging. So I want to say thank you for putting your neck out there, sticking with it. You know, you're at like almost 400 episodes now.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And it'll be 4 years old in August.
What has contributed to the growth of the podcast and Porch Talk over the years? Do you attribute it to social media? Do you attribute it to the sharing of the content by listeners? Those can be the same thing, I realize, but just give me some pointers on where you saw the most growth.
Those things and the guests. I think the guest is the most important. And then when I make that social media post sharing about who I had on, their friends and their fans are going to tune in, and then it begins to bounce around social media like a ping pong ball.
Who has been the hardest hitting guest? Like when you had them on, your fucking downloads skyrocketed.
Ham Bagby.
Who's Ham Bagby?
He's a singer-songwriter out of Birmingham, Alabama. He hit the Tuscaloosa scene almost 15 years ago, and there was a great dive bar called Egan's, and it wasn't exactly a residency, but he got to play there quite a bit, and he started putting on this thing called the Ham Ham Jam Jam, and it went on for, I want to say, 7 years, and it was pretty much just different iterations of bands that he had been in the past, and it was like, it was kind of all about Ham and like all the different iterations over the years, and it was a very cool event that happened every year at this dive bar, and he just dropped his album 2 days ago. It's called All Filler, No Killer. But every song on it is a killer. And so, like, one of the opening tracks, he shared it. If you want to get involved with Han Bagby, he's shared two songs with off these mics. Is one of them is probably my favorite song that he has, and it's something that I relate to. And I mean, we're doing a good job here with this 32-ounce Bush is drinking PBRs with my dumbass friends.
Easter egg.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah, the podcasting analytics and marketing and
it's never but like I've had like really famous people on the show like Sean James, that was a big deal, and that episode didn't perform well until it was out for a whole year, and then people started finding it. I've had Jimmy Duck Holmes from the Blue Front Cafe in Bentonia.
Cool.
That was a great episode, but it really didn't do anything until it was out for about 3 months.
Did you do it from the Blue Front Cafe?
Mm-hmm, right there.
That's cool.
And that was before he was nominated for a Grammy.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool. Mm-hmm. I was listening to a podcast with the Black Keys. They were with Joe Rogan, and I saw a snippet of that interview, and they mentioned Blue Front Cafe being an influence and going to the, what's the festival they have?
It's
the Bentonia Blues,
Festival. 50th anniversary this year in June. Groove Johnson will be playing it on the 18th, that Saturday.
Cool.
Just throwing that out there.
Right on our doorstep.
Indeed it is.
Him saying ham, ham, jam, jam made me think of our ham jam.
And then it made me think of, well, maybe Ham figured out that we had the ham jam, and he called his the double ham, double jam.
So that led
I was like, he's mispronouncing our stuff. Like, at first, that's what I thought. I was like, whoa.
He's like, what's better than a ham jam?
Ham, ham, jam, jam.
Double ham, double jam.
Ham square, jam square.
Yeah.
Where do we...
Ham plus one, jam
where
plus
does
one.
That, where does that stand in Philadelphia, the ham jam? Did we have it this year?
I don't think we had it this year.
Scoot up to the mic a little bit for me, please, Daniel.
I don't think we had it this year.
But is that put on by the Arts Council or the Chamber of Commerce, or do you have any idea who that's put on by?
It's put on by the community development. You know,
The people at the depot down there.
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, you know, and I could be, but I believe they put it on.
I don't. Obviously, we had coronavirus and all that, so we know why we didn't have it those years, but those are things that are so vital to the health of a community.
Yeah, ham jam's fun, you know. I look forward to it every year.
Yeah, absolutely.
I kind of think since we had these last couple of years of shutdown and all that maybe that might have held it up a little bit, but you know, that's all right.
It was consistent for a while. Like the ham jams, when the ham jam start? What year do you think it started?
I'd say probably 2005-ish, give or take.
And so what is the ham jam? Is this for Philadelphia musicians come together and put on for the community?
Mostly lots of local musicians, and then maybe somebody from out of town will come in for a late night slot, you know, some special.
And there's a barbecue aspect of it. There's a run associated with it. It's a community festival.
It's a barbecue competition.
Oh, okay. Oh, there's the ham.
It needs to make a return just for the betterment of the
on top community. Of a, you know, a festival with vendors and music stages and
so,
run, you know.
I'm from Kennedy, Alabama, small town. It's about, if you're familiar with Columbus, Mississippi, it's just across the state line. I grew up hearing about the Neshoba County Fair. But I had never heard of this. So I don't guess it's totally different.
Well, it's a totally different thing. Unrelated. Neshoba County Fair obviously is where
really nothing. Like the fair, I mean,
no,
and you know, once we're talking about the fair, it's a nice segue. I want to hear your perspective of the fair. Alan came and played first Friday last week at the Pavilion, and I would like, and that's his first time, first day, only day to this date at the fair.
That's true.
So, tell me from your perspective, what did you think when you showed up at the fairgrounds and saw how it was and what was happening there?
Man, it was magic. I grew up hearing about this, and I'm driving down with Matt Mason from Starkville down here to Philly, and he grew up in Philadelphia, and he grew up going to the fair. And so the whole ride down here, he was just all the awe and wonder of all these years of him growing up and doing this and what it meant to be able to play it.
The legend.
Yeah. And then right when I see the fairgrounds and I see all the cars, I'm seeing all the people, and I'm like, oh, we're about to have a ball. And great musicians. I think this was, is that your day where you get to kind of pick who's who?
I assist with the booking of the pavilion acts on the Friday with a number of other people. And I have the privilege of helping out with that. I'm going to read the list here in a little while of that Fair Friday. But
the talent that day, man, it was unbelievable.
I got to pick a few of the acts and, you know, three last year, I think, were my picks.
What does that process look like?
It's nothing really structured, but we've been doing it for over a decade. So the first thing we do when we get the word that it's time to do a schedule, as if, you know, someone from the fair has asked us again, and we hope that we get asked back every year. But after the fair is over, as y'all know, it's gone for a while. And after sometime in the springtime, you'll hear back, hey, you guys want to pick some acts, you know. So the guild, you know, helps facilitate the acts. We don't choose, like, go around and pick who we want. We facilitate people that want to play into a certain amount of time slots. And so the first thing we do, like a month or so ago, 6 weeks, okay, it's time to get some people. So we say, well, who's playing now locally? Who's from here? Who do we like? Who we heard? Who's active? Who is interested and passionate? And then so chances are, like, if we don't know that you're really talented or wanting to perform and you're not out there in some way where we could find you or see you, then we don't know to call you. So we find, and we've done it so many years that a lot of people that have done it will go ahead and ask before, you know, hey, I want to do this again, you know? And so if they're local.
And can I reach out and ask you right now if I can do this?
Yeah. Well, I believe we already submitted the list.
Oh.
Well, you're getting the talent
year,
show.
I want to get on for next year. Just go ahead and stamp me in for next year. Slide me in. I want to get a review.
I will bring this to the group that does the picking and the all that, and
I will come
because I'm not a single voice on it. But your request is heard, accepted, and will be moved forward through the process.
And it would be an honor.
What is the Musicians Guild? Is that the correct name?
The Philadelphia Neshoba County Musicians Guild.
What are the origins of that group, and what are the intentions and the ultimate goal of the group?
Well, you know, something like 12, 13 years ago, a group of people from Philadelphia got together, and we all formed, many of us, we're talking about a giant room full of people, we formed the Philadelphia Neshoba County Music Association. And over the next few years, we put on benefits and things like that, and it sort of came about because of the Magnolia Music Festival that Ben Hardy and myself and many other people put on for a few years, you know. And born out of that music festival at the old Magnolia, which is the Porterhouse now, you know, a music association was born, and many of local musicians and music-minded people and interested parties came to the meetings, and we formed a board, and we did a whole bunch of cool stuff, and we applied for and got a 501c3 nonprofit status, and we kept that, and we raised money through playing concerts and all this sort of stuff. And then you know, that went on for a while, and it kind of died down after that for a while, and you know, until a few years later, it was kind of we had it, but we weren't that active. Myself and a handful of the original members, you know, was like, well, we need to do something with this more than we're doing with it right now. We kind of got it, you know, so let's keep it and move it forward. So we reached out to everyone that we could from the original membership roles and was like, hey, we're kicking it back up, you know, and we put it out there in a public way, and we called it at this point the Musicians Guild, which seemed to be a little more descriptive than an association.
Right, right.
And we started running the board and offering services. And at that time, we got real, real active. We started giving free music lessons to people after school and stuff. Their folks would bring them out to the VFW. And we would be all in the big room there. And a different musician would be sitting with a different group, like teaching songwriting or guitar or vocals or whatever. And and then we'd be talking about how to do copyrights and any questions that they may have. We did that, and we put on a bunch of benefits out of the VFW, which, you know, we another thing we did was we recorded. We also, the guild worked in the Ellis Theater, like doing lots of benefits, you know, when we were back before it was with the new, you know, the museum. We were just still trying to keep the roof on it. And, you know, the Arts Council did run that, the Arts Council from town here, you know, which I'm on the board currently. But so we assisted. I'm just saying we put the roof on it. But we played some benefits where money from that went to the upkeep and the restoration of the Ellis before the museum came around. And we recorded a bunch of those shows, too. You know, all of our local people were coming and playing, and mostly local. And we had one person from who now lives in New Orleans but is originally from here, who's an amazing artist, come. And out of this one particular live recording, we're listening to the playbacks at it. I think it's maybe my studio, and or maybe it was Shadowlight. And we were like, this is so amazing. This particular one 25-minute set right here is like world class, like over 1% awesome. Well, so we contacted the artist and like, hey, you got a real good cut. You know, when I played that night too, but I can tell you my cut wasn't as good as this cut. It was, everything was brilliant. The audience was interacting. There's lots of love there. Most of the songs are original. There were a couple of cover songs which are done originally. We said, hey, you got a good cut. You know, we want to, the guild, we want to help you do something with it. And we, none of the songs are copyrighted. Nothing was legal. So we said, well, the first thing we got to do for you, the artist, is copyright this stuff in your name. All this, we're not keeping none of this. This is all through you. So we copyrighted it all for the artist. You know, there was fees there. We paid for the two cover songs, the proper licensing fees to let them be played on the internet and to be sold. We paid for all that legally. We got the artwork done. We pressed a bunch of CDs, all for the artist. And
Something that was seen in this particular artist that the guild looked at as, for lack of a better word, worth the investment?
Oh, absolutely. This particular disc that is uncirculated to this day, it's uncirculated. Maybe a few copies got out. See, because this was, it's just one of the things. When I say it's uncirculated, I mean it's largely like the guild sold some CDs to pay back some of the money that we spent on it, and the artist agreed to let us sell a handful of CDs, but we didn't need much to pay back these licensing fees, and the records weren't very much. We did it pretty close, pretty smart, and on a budget, so the guild money didn't come out too much, and we recorded it and mastered it and did all this for free anyway, you know, and we did pay for it to be mastered, but so we didn't spend a lot. We sold enough back to pay just the expenses that we put out on it, and gave the artist all the rest of the CDs. Well, most of them, except for there's a few back for historical purposes that the artist knows we have, in case, like, we're going to have a membership drive, the first one in years, on, I think it's Thursday, June 2nd at the VFW. And I'm just not a big promoter of, like, on social media. It's one of my downsides, but I'm currently the president. I'm the president of the Musicians Guild now. We met last month, and I was voted and I've been one before, so I was secretary before that. So now I'm the president. We're going to do a little membership drive. And we might have a few of those special CDs I just discussed there by the artist's permission for sale for a little bit of fundraising for the guild. And that's literally the only place you're going to ever hear them or get them, like, anywhere is, you know, I got a box left over that I held, you know,
yeah,
for later purposes.
So is it safe to say that y'all have taken on the responsibility of getting the artists on their feet, so to speak?
We want, especially when we recognize, like, world class talent that's very special, that the world deserves to hear, that the art itself deserves to live. You know, how could you deny that? I mean, in this particular record, will blow your socks off. And it's not just the music parts, which are awesome. And by the way, that guitar that I just played on this beginning of this show is the exact guitar that is played on that set, because I let the artist borrow my guitar for that set. And it was that guitar you just heard. It appears in that, and that's a Taylor 310-99. It's great. You know, the tones, everything is good. So my guitar is actually a little famous, more famous than me, as far as that record goes. But then, but it's like that you can hear the audience interaction like at the beginning and end of the songs, you know, the crowd participation in the Ellis. It's a historical piece, a picture in time of stamp that was taken in that old theater leading up to now it being renovated for, you know, the museum and for that kind of use, which is awesome because it's, they're doing tremendously amazing, fabulous things up there. But we got one of the last live recording shows, one of the last ones in that old theater before it all changed.
Who's the artist?
The artist is Lola Darling, also known as Lola Jean Darling.
Has Lola not pursued a career in music after being, you know, discovered by the Guild and working in collaboration with one another?
Lola wasn't discovered by the Guild. I wouldn't say we discovered Lola.
She was brought to y'all's attention.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice bone-in tender ribeye steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At some point.
That's a badass name, by the way, the Guild.
Yeah.
Guild. He kind of sounds like the... Yeah, mysterious.
Yeah. The Guild. Sam Crow, you know.
Yes, sir.
I found Lola at the Echo Lounge one night. I was playing a show with All Around Hounds, and Lola walked through the door, come freshly from a train car. As in, like, one of the kinds with the doors open that you hop in for free and ride around the country on. Came straight from there. Walked into the Echo. And later, someone asked if Lola could play on stage. And I'm like, sure. And then Lola gets up, grabs that guitar, the one I played earlier, and plays original work. And I was completely blown away by the quality. And I became a big fan and a follower. And a friend for years. So when it came time to do any show, we did lots of shows and we would always get Lola to come and play at all our stuff. And this one, like the magic happened on air and we got it. And the cover of that record, as a matter of fact, I did the artwork for. And I don't even think I'm pretty sure I didn't say on the CD that I did the artwork because I just kind of left it up.
So since the work is copyrighted and everything is buttoned up from a legal standpoint, what would be stopping Lola from distributing that music to streaming platforms?
Absolutely nothing. And we've discussed it. And most likely, I was saying when I drop the All Around Hound stuff that I should have done dropped, I will drop the Lola stuff too. Through whatever format, you know, I do. And because I still do keep in touch.
There is such a thirst, regardless of industry, in my opinion.
And it'll be done through permissions when I do it, you know.
Shout out, Lola.
There's a thirst for authenticity and originality, regardless of what industry you're talking about, entertainment, the corporate world. It's very hard to be authentic in yourself because you have to walk that line of protecting somebody else's profit. But when you have these independent artists, whether it be podcasts, content creators across the board that are not anchored down by the dollar, you get more original content. And the fact that she has all of her stuff copyrighted and buttoned up legally, thanks to the Guild, she now can go distribute that music. And I think it would be a hit. I hadn't known you very long, Daniel, but I'd known you long enough to know that I trust your taste in evaluating talent.
Oh, these songs are on fire.
So I think it would, I said all that to say that I think it would be a hit because people are yearning for that originality and that, that authenticity.
Yes, and I want to piggyback off that and add something to that. What is, what, how would you describe that one it factor that said person had or has? How would you describe it for the audience?
I would say that person would have, you know, natural talent, or also, you know, something that, that's clear that they worked on, they developed their talent, you know, over a period of time. And, but the most important thing is, authenticity, authentic people, authentic ideas, you know, put out in the world after enduring lots of hard work to make it as good as possible. And mostly they're so passionate about their work that they will do almost anything to see it live. And, and many other things, but you know, the lots of rehearsal and practice and lots of dedication and all these, when all these things meet with talent, with a great talent that is undeniable, that's, you can almost recognize that instantly, anywhere you go. And, especially, you know, I just love the originality part. You know, I want to know what your story is and what your talents are at the top. And I don't, it's fine. I'll be entertained if you're imitating somebody else. I'll still be entertained and I'll still appreciate what you're doing. But I really want to see deep down in your soul, inside the seventh fold of the sevenfold fence.
And I appreciate everything you just said about the how deep you just took it right there.
Alan, I'm interested in your perspective on whether or not you think a legitimate underground music industry can be built.
Yes, because I'm building it. As Daniel mentioned earlier, I have thrown 3 music festivals at my house in Kennedy. Each year it gets a little bit better. It gets a little bit bigger.
And what's the name of it?
Porch Fest. This one was Porch Fest 22. We had 2 different food trucks, had 15 different artists, had 2 bands. And we had the Stiftones. They came all the way down in their Hearst. That's what they tour in, all the way down from New Hampshire to play this.
How did y'all get hooked up with them?
The podcast.
Oh, yeah?
We met. So one of the greatest things that I ever did for Porch Talk was I entered the NPR Tiny Desk Concert Series. It's where you just upload a video to NPR, and then you get thrown into these groups on social media to where you can interact with one another because you're all in the same contest. So I just told them all, I got this podcast, and I like interviewing musicians. And if you're not local to Alabama, Mississippi, I'll get you on a Skype call right now, and we'll get this interview going. And so I snagged interviews from Boston, California, New Hampshire, and then it began.
Do you find the virtual interviews to be less intimate than in person?
And it's a bit harder. So I don't try to press as hard because this is a more intimate thing, and I can feel the room and I can feel you, and I know if I'm pushing buttons. And also there's a delay. So after on a Skype call, I say something. There's a pause, and then you're speaking. And then I have to take that in, and so it's a weird dynamic. It is.
Me and LaMichael Sam Carter, the third evangelical Christian,
I like that.
We did a virtual conversation at the beginning of the County Line. I'm talking like first 3 or 4 episodes maybe. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to learn how to do it, number one, and I thought that it was, and it is, a viable option. But it was very difficult to have the most authentic conversation possible. And I understand that sometimes it's just, if the guest is just too good to pass up, or mm-hmm. you got to, you know, you're trying to use not solely someone's marketability, but they are a good spotlight for the message that you're trying to push and, you know, gain popularity. Let's not kid ourselves. We all want to,
that's right.
We all want to grow. And, I just feel much more comfortable, as you've alluded to, having a conversation with someone in person because I can read those body gestures and that body language and facial expressions much more naturally in real time, physically with that person, as opposed to being electronically. The delay is the thing that throws me off the most, because the interjections and the interaction is, it's just thrown out of whack.
Yep. And so another thing that I like to do, and I mean, this is testament here, but the interview that I did with Daniel, I drove to Daniel. And so I try to go to my guests. I don't make them come to me or any of that, because I want them to feel as at home, because they're at home, as possible. So that all those veils, and talking about the sevenfold fence, I've already got past a couple of those folds, and we can get to the heart of the issue a lot quicker.
Yeah, I have found that I do the same thing. But I do it out of necessity. If it was up to me, I would have everybody sitting right here in this room having a conversation just like we are right now. Because when I am on someone else's turf, I am not as good of a interviewer and conversationalist, because I'm less prone to being, not disrespectful, but pushing buttons in someone else's territory. I don't want to, you know, like when I was with Sid Salter, we did it in his office at Mississippi State, on Mississippi State's campus. It's this big, it's the old president's office. And I mean, it's just immaculate. He's got this table in there, this office table with these chairs around it. He's got cowbells all over the wall and books. I mean, it's just, I told him when I walked in, I said, Mr. Sid, I said, if I could pick an office, this is what it would be. I mean, it's just massive. And he was like, yeah, it was the president's office until, I think he said, like 4 or 5 years ago or something. But there was just a level of respect and decency that I wanted to present to him, because he took time out of his day, brought me in his office. And I still pressed on a couple of things that he had to say, and questioned him on some things. But I was not as objective as I feel like I am when I'm in my own house. And that may be weird, but it's just how I feel. And I want to give the audience the most authentic conversation. And so I feel like for them to receive the best product, it's best for me to have people in the house when possible. Does that make any sense?
Oh, yeah.
In the house.
In the house. You already know what it is, cuz.
Yeah. But so what did you think about my man's music? Has Lee let you hear some of his artwork?
Yes.
Has he blessed you with some of it?
I thought it was fantastic.
Who do you think he resembles? As an artist, who would you compare him to?
I think he's very original. I do. I don't think I would hazard to compare, to do any dangerous comparisons.
I couldn't think of one either.
But I thought the music that you're talking about has got a real strong has real strong bones to it. That's one thing I said about
it. I like the flow.
It flows. It's entertaining. It's on the right frequency, and I really dig it a lot.
There's some things we got to do TLC wise from a production standpoint, I feel like, that we need to address. But I do feel like our lyricism and arranging of songs is getting better.
It's become a lot more cohesive.
It has.
A lot less of, well, I don't have to ask you. I kind of already know. I can tweet here, there, boom.
Do, man, you need to do something with that damn torch. You keep knocking that motherfucker over.
See how he treats me?
I mean, the whole time. So
you're the co-host, man. You're the punching bag.
I know. I definitely. Yep. I'm. Who am I? Skip Bayless. Come on.
No, I ain't. Like, you're that. Shannon Sharp.
I was in school at Alcorn, and I met some people there that knew Shannon Sharp.
Shannon Sharp is a stand-up dude. I love Shannon Sharp, but he be getting taken to school by Skip Bayless. Skip Bayless be serving his motherfucking ass.
He does.
Every time.
Some of the stuff gets too, like, personal on those talk shows. It gets, I know it's like, it's whatever, they're selling it, but I mean, it's tough.
I don't like that format. Like, just get on TV and holler at each other.
Yes. Just get on TV and I'll just let this guy disrespect me and then I'll be the bad guy and we'll do it again tomorrow.
But people must watch it, or ESPN is just so big that it doesn't matter. Like, they're on regardless. And so their advertising space is just valuable because they were first.
I tell you, someone I do like as a podcaster and as a color commentator, Pat McAfee. Remember he punted for the Colts?
I know who you're talking about.
Pat would fly down on kickoff and smack your ass, dude. Everything.
That dude, he wrestled in WrestleMania. Did you see it? Okay, I didn't get into wrestling until about 4 years ago. I wasn't allowed to watch it as a kid. So I became an adult and I started watching it.
When I was a kid, I watched the Rock and Roll Express, you know, The Road.
Oh, I'm going back, dude. And I gotta say, like Macho Man and Oh Savage.
The Road Warriors.
Oh, I'm Shawn Michaels guy. I'm a Attitude Era.
Dusty Rhodes.
You know how you made it.
You would love Kevin Gordon. He loves Dusty Rhodes. He made me watch my lights all night. Going
Kevin Gordon and Daniel Sharp in a room together talking about
if
wrestling.
Y'all talked about Dusty Rhodes. Y'all would hug immediately.
That's a piece of conversation that needs to be recorded.
Yes. Ask Jeff Stewart about wrestling.
Oh, really? Is he a big wrestling fan?
He knows all about it. When he was working with Pearl River, he got to spend quite a bit of time with wrestlers. Like, and I don't know exactly why, but I've seen the photo album of him and these classic wrestlers, and they're all getting the wrestlers were more excited about getting their picture made with Pearl River than the Pearl River was about getting their picture made with the wrestlers. You know?
I heard somebody describe wrestling as being redneck soap opera, and I had never thought about it in that context before. Like, I didn't watch a lot of wrestling coming up either. I just always looked at it as being fake and like just leaving it, taking it at face value, like, oh, it's fake, whatever, it's not real, so I don't want to watch it.
Man, but let me do the people's elbow on you.
There's a storyline.
See how fake it is.
There's a storyline, and the storyline is what sells because people get entrenched by that story.
Oh, that's right. It's a big dance up there.
Jimmy
it's
Superfly
Snuka. It's a big production. That's the fake aspect
there's
of
no
it.
There's no way
sure,
that I was not going to say that.
I don't know a lot about wrestling, but when I heard that analogy, I was like, you know what? Now it makes sense why so many people like it, because there is a story being told, and us as humans, we like to hear a story. Like, look at music, look at books, we like fucking stories. And so it doesn't matter necessarily what context it comes in, whether it's storytelling or music or books or wrestling, a story's still being told, or a soap opera. There's a lot of shit that'll resonate with people that hadn't even been created yet. As far as like, and I think original content and the technology that we have to be able to just sit here and bullshit and broadcast our everyday life, there's a market there.
There really is. And it's crazy, like, to talk about just a brand new story. Like, this overtook Joe Rogan as being number one, but it's that new Batman podcast where they're just telling stories out of Batman.
I saw that.
And I'm like, personally, that's not my jam, but obviously it is a lot of people's jam, right?
I haven't heard it, but I mean, what do you mean stories about Batman?
Yeah,
so they're taking the Batman universe and all the lore and all of that, and they're just developing and crafting new stories and letting you know, like, the history, some of the smaller villains maybe you didn't know about. I haven't listened to it, so that is base level all I can give you.
I hadn't listened to it either. I just saw that I look at those
my ratings. Roommate won't shut the hell up about it. I know that.
I look at those ratings every now and then, and I saw where Batman overtook Joe Rogan. And to overtake Joe Rogan in today's day and time,
it's going to take a Batman.
Yeah, it's going to take some good shit. So whatever they've done, I'm gonna make it a point to go listen to it, which I don't – y'all forgive me. I'm not a big Marvel action figure, superhero guru. Just – I don't have anything against it. Just didn't grow up doing it, never took an interest in it.
Same.
But there are a lot of people that do, and it's obvious when you look at the Batman podcast, for example. And then, you know, they keep recreating. They have different Spider-Mans and different Batmans and different – people to play these roles, and they come up with, I guess, a different variation of the story each time they come out with a new movie, and it's just they've created a brand.
And the technology gets way better.
This is going to live forever. I mean, generations will die out, and Spider-Man will still fucking exist and still make a lot of money.
I mean, growing up, I only cared about two things, baseball and music.
I met Spider-Man when I was about 4 years old, and I walked up to him, and I asked a question, How do you climb the walls? And he said, very carefully.
Very smart man.
Did you refer to him as Peter or Spider-Man?
I just called him Spider-Man. He was in costume, and I didn't want him to know that I knew who he was.
What's Spider-Man's name?
Peter Parker. Peter.
What's Batman's name?
Bruce Wayne.
Peter Parker and Bruce Wayne. There was a
two separate universes, by the way.
One night, I was in Jackson, Mississippi at the Whataburger on County Line. It was me and Harper, and we had been to a concert or something. It was like 3:30 in the morning. And we were in there getting our honey butter chicken biscuit, and there was this
preach.
There was this homeless man in there, and I struck up a conversation with him. Just it was me, Harper, and this homeless guy, and I started talking to him, and he asked me my name, and I told him what we'd been doing that night, and so then I turned the conversation to him to find out more about him, and I asked him what his name was, and he told me Bruce Wayne. And I didn't know who the fuck Bruce Wayne was. I knew who Batman was, but I didn't know Batman was Bruce Wayne. And then my buddy was up there ordering while I was talking to the homeless guy. And then we sat down to eat. He was like, "So what homeboy over there had to say?" And I was like, "Oh, he just told me his name was Bruce Wayne." And he thought it was the funniest thing. I mean, he fell out laughing. I was like, "Hey, what the fuck are you laughing at?" And after he got done laughing hysterically, he was like, "Bruce Wayne's Batman, blah, 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 blah." So this homeless dude was just sitting there fucking with me the whole time.
Dude, I have a funny story. There was a guy, I'm not going to name the town because people may remember this cat, and I'm not disparaging him. He wasn't all there. Like, elevator didn't go all the way to the top. All he did in town, he used to drag a chain.
He was one brick short of a full load.
That's right.
Or maybe a couple.
Mm-hmm. And so one day my buddy asked him, "So why don't you drag that chain all over town?" He said, "Well, I can't push it, can I?"
True story.
Good answer.
Yeah. Yeah, he answered. I don't think that's what the guy was asking.
No,
but
it is an answer.
Did he give his motive behind or his intent as it pertains to the chain? Ooh. He just left it at that.
That's all it was said.
Can't push it, can I?
And just moved on. Kept on dragging it.
Daniel, how many bandanas do you have?
A couple of dozen, at least, if not more.
How long do you keep a bandana?
It's unusual times, you know, depending on.
Do you have a favorite?
Favorite bandana? Not really. I like a lot of my bandanas. I like, there's one particular one that's got red, white, and black in it. You'll like that.
Oh, yeah. Philly High Till I Die.
Yeah. I really like that one. And I hope I don't lose it.
How long have you had said bandana?
I've had that bandana about, I don't know, 7-8 years probably.
Yeah. Damn, I'd lose bandana. I couldn't keep 7-8 years.
Yeah, I like that bandana. I got a pink bandana that I just found down at the fairgrounds. We went down to clean the cabin up a couple of days ago, and I found a pink bandana, and I'm like, don't remember, don't know who, whatever, but I'm like, never know when I'm going to need extra, so I brought it home, washed it, and I put it in my, you know.
Is your relationship with bandana similar to the relationship David had with swords?
Yeah. I will leave bandanas around. I will leave picks around. Some cases I leave guitars at places, you know.
You left a pick over here. You need to be back. You need to be back to bless us with some art.
Yeah. Well, I hope it's a blessing. It's certainly something. It's some physical action that I'm putting out in the world.
So what we got planned for tonight?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. This is going to be fun.
All right. Well,
I get to get involved. Right,
we got a few more things to talk about. And then we'll talk about tonight.
Okay.
We're talking about the fair. And, you know, I'll open that thing with a little bit of a hat tip to the fair.
Right, song.
And I probably had intended on talking more about it. But, you know, we all look forward to people who go to the fair, we all look forward to the fair, especially people with cabins or who go to cabins.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that's part of it. And I want to, we talked about the first Friday fair lineup. We touched on it earlier. I've got it right here. And
let's hear it.
We're going to have Garrett Johnston, Lakin Winstead, Zachariah Lloyd, Maddie Williams, Chrissy Long, Lauren Gwynn Posey, Ben McDaniel, Philip Sable, Mitchell Presley. I'm going to play a couple myself.
Woo, woo.
And so,
what you going to play?
I never know.
Oh, you know what I want? You know what I've been waiting on?
I heard, but... But I'll have to get a confirmation on that, just so I don't play the wrong one.
Oh, I want to hear
are these people that you just named primarily from Neshoba County?
Everyone, mostly on this list. We got as far away as Union. You know, we have...
Shout out to the U. Spent half my life in the U.
So, out of that group, there's some talented folks in there?
Super. The whole group.
Everybody in there.
Very talented. And we got a couple from out of town. That'd be Zach and Mitch. And both of those guys are...
Oxford 2.0.
You know, world.
I've heard Lakin Winston can sing. Never heard her sing, but I've heard she has some heights.
She is star quality. She is that good. Yeah. Absolutely. She's played up there quite a few times.
Shan came on the podcast and had a very productive conversation back.
Matter of fact, that live thing we did at the Ellis that we recorded, she got recorded too at that several many years ago. And I've got that in my files, and I'll be willing to bet you that Shan or Lakin or nobody's got her performance. It was really great there. That also exists as well.
Did she record?
Well, she got recorded that night.
I'm saying, like, in a formal setting or in a concerted effort.
I haven't heard about any recordings.
So, do you think you could collaborate with Mr. Lee over here?
I'm quite sure I could.
What kind of vibe would y'all be on?
I think it probably, I've thought about this, I think it would probably end up in very Nappy Roots-ish.
Yes.
Y'all familiar with Nappy Roots?
I see it be a little more electronic than that, though.
Nappy Roots is a hip-hop group from Kentucky.
My thing maybe like Urban Resistance.
I don't know who that is. See, we have very different tastes.
That's just a word I just made up.
Urban Resistance?
To describe our sound.
Yeah.
And by resistance, I don't mean resistance to
urban settings,
but I mean a resistance that lives within it.
I agree. It's a expression of where we come from with some resistance tinged in there too.
You know, like resistance fighters.
Yes. That'd be interesting. The beats that I find to be most conducive to my feeling, soul, vibe, style are the ones that are heavily guitar heavy, whether it be a blues beat or a country beat, southern soul beat. The existence of a guitar, for whatever reason, coupled with a little trap beat, you know, some snares and some bass, is my favorite. And I think Daniel's guitar, probably Alan's as well, would mesh nicely in certain instances with some of our lyrics.
And I think one of the beautiful things that we're allowed to do now in music is be able to take something and Mr. Daniel Sharp or whoever.
Sample it.
Yeah, sample that and then it be in music, you know, 50 years down the road that we don't even know about. I just think that's very unique. And
have you guys sampled any All Around Hounds yet?
I know because I'm waiting on the 4-disc track. Me and Nathan Chaney won't stand for nothing less.
He's negotiating with you, Daniel.
Oh, I am. Back and forth.
We're at the negotiating table.
Everybody knows I can beatball pretty cheap.
I just committed another party foul, so I'm probably in trouble already, but I'll be all right.
God damn it. Did you spill something?
As long as it's not in money.
Dude, you are...
No, I didn't spill it. The thing, it was in the freezer and overflowed. I'm sorry.
Idiot. He is a full-blown maniac is what he is. Studio Steve was sitting in the chair you are right now, and Mike was sitting in that chair. We were talking. It was like 10 or 15 minutes into the conversation, and he has these black latex gloves on because he's trying to...
Saw those in the chair over there, and I didn't want to ask.
For why?
Had to move those to set the chair up.
Trying to quit biting his fingernails. And you need to put them back on. Don't worry about it. We'll tend to it later.
Well, I mean, I'm just going to sit this down. I'm already brought in.
It poured right into the laptop. You probably should do something about it.
Yeah, you need to. I like Coors Light's cans.
Now quit heckling me. I remember. So, and I'm going to hold you to it. If you forget about me in the guild, you and the guild forget about me, it's going to be war.
You know, all you got to do is join the guild, right?
What you got to do?
No. Actually, I mean, being in the guild has nothing to do with getting on with the fair. Not
oh, that's yes.
I mean, we appreciate it if you want to join, and we got lots of things to do. So come on June 2nd to our membership drive out at the VFW, and we'll join you right up. But you absolutely don't have to be in the guild to get on at the fair. We just got to know about you some way. And then we listen to what you're doing, and maybe we come see you and all this. And plus, you know, we got to know, we have to know that you're going to come and play when you say you are, because this is going into the program at the fair. Your name will be on the program. And like, so, you know, you don't want to put your name in the program at the fair and then, you know, flake out or whatever. So, like, we are a filter. We make sure that who says they're going to be there, you know, has, you know, the goods.
Is there
know,
a
physically, yeah. And that they're actually going to show up and do the work. And, you know, mostly it's hometown. That's our, we go as hard as we can to get those. And then we add a couple people from out of town. If we got some slots. That's what we always do. So
there's also a pool that you can pull from, and you're well aware of this, I know, but for the people listening, that there are people in surrounding counties that go to the Neshoba County Fair and have cabins and traditions and history, whether it be Newton, Kemper, Winston, Leek, those are the surrounding counties directly, and then Lauderdale. There are people and families that have gone to the fair for generations, and so you have that pool to pull from, that talent pool of surrounding counties, and it's not just limited to.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times after the show or during the show on the Friday, someone will walk up and say, "Hey, this is great. I want to play next year." And then we remember that and put them down. We check with them, and most importantly, if they're already out doing something visible, then it's easy to find them and to know they're doing it. You know, otherwise, we'll check with them and see what's going on, and then we'll try to put them in a slot.
What do you?
And some slots are 15 minutes, and some slots are 45 minutes. It's just, we kind of break it up however we need to.
What do you think about the guild? Or maybe it's a page totally unassociated with the guild, but has the guild's content on it on YouTube, having these performances videoed and uploaded to this page to fund
the guild.
The guild. The proceeds go to the guild.
Only the guild.
Well, I mean, I like that idea. Maybe not for the pavilion, because, you know, I mean, I thought it would be okay. There would be nothing wrong with that. But
what would be wrong with that?
There would be nothing really wrong with it, but, you know, I got a lot of other jobs besides doing the video. When you, as you know, when you start doing production, and also now you got to remember that.
I'm not saying you do it personally, yeah. Daniel. I'm saying like we just, if we could find a way to make that happen, yeah. And not put any more on the guild's plate than is already there.
Yeah. Well, and I would think in an official capacity, if we were going to try to do something like that, we would have to pass that. We would want to pass that through the fair board before we just jumped on top of doing something like that.
Sure.
And I'm sure it'd be, it probably might be okay, but I always look for the proper thing up front. And, you know, there, if we're going to, as a 501c3, start trying to do something, you know, it would have to be official. And we as the guild aren't, we're not the official bearers of that Friday. We are a group of people that assist the fair board in doing this.
But what if
so that's not our day. The guild, you know, we're just privileged enough to be asked to help.
So let's take let's take the fair out of the equation.
And yeah, just exactly. Say, yeah, take the fair out of the equation, and what you described doing anywhere would be a great idea. And, you know, possibly even some content from there. But, yeah, just take the fair out of it. That's kind of special. And I don't want to do anything to mess up our opportunity to fill that stage up on Friday. So, you know, I kind of like it the way it is. It's kind of, you know, it is what it is. It's real cool, and it's real authentic and real, you know, down to earth, sort of easy and old school. And I kind of harken back. I love the days when there weren't cell phones, you know, sometimes.
I wish.
And the show will change. If you're filming the whole thing, it's all going to change. You know, if you're not just getting to cut loose and have fun. And not that people don't film it and share it, and they will, and that's perfectly fine, but that's totally different than an organization.
The thing to do.
Doing it like that.
You know, the thing to,
that'd be a whole other set of stuff.
It's a personal thing, but like comics specifically. I just caught Steve O's bucket list tour. I caught him down in Mobile. And like rule number one, right before he came out on stage, if security sees a phone, you will be kicked the fuck out.
Yeah, I agree with that.
This is original content. It is not made for you to record and put on your Snapchat or put up on your social media, because you're literally robbing.
That's the way Andrew Dice Clay does it.
Okay, and take it further, like Jack White. You go to a Jack White show, unless it's a festival, you go to see Jack White, they have these bags. Dave Chappelle does it too.
You can keep your phone, but it's going to be in this bag. Do not access that bag until you're off the grounds. You are here for an experience. Now experience it. I hate, like, personally, when my friends go see their favorite country star because their entire Snapchat is the whole fucking concert. And I was like, buddy, did you ever take a minute just to realize that you were there with your girl and you could have been dancing and having a good time with her rather than just having that phone in your hand the whole time? What?
There are positives and negatives to it.
Well, how close are we to being cyborgs in real life?
Exactly.
Is that how we're going to evolve into machines?
Yes, I do think so.
I'm not saying if that's right or wrong.
I mean, we're going to get a chip coming.
It's like, you know, Justice League of America.
Yeah, I think in regards to what you said, Alan, when people are able to have that thing in their hand.
I wanted to join the conversation.
And record their experience, it does take away from the naturalness of it, for lack of a better word, and the fact that people can revisit that moment in time.
Sure.
Which can be a good thing, can be a bad thing. There's something special about being somewhere in person and it not being recorded to where it cannot be accessed after that moment in time. I understand that aspect of it, but I also understand the value of capturing authentic situations, and as you do as well, because Porch Talk, I mean, that's mm-hmm. that's what you, to me, it sounds like started it based off of, to capture real content mm-hmm. and put it out to people. But as far as performances go, especially comedians and musicians, that is hard work that they put in and go out there to perform. And they don't want, I would imagine, to be slighted of that hard work in the way of monetary gains. And so once mm-hmm. you're able to go out there and record some piece of content and then redistribute it, regardless if you're making money off of it or not, it's taken away from the experience that the artist created in the environment and the vibe. But I do think that if the artist has somebody like Daniel Sharp on their side, to where they copyright it, make sure everything's buttoned up, make sure everything's the way it's supposed to be from a legal standpoint, that you can take that video content and, you know, fulfill the potential of it from a monetary standpoint and mm-hmm. a nostalgic standpoint. Mm-hmm. What you got going, Daniel?
Y'all smell that? Smells like Uncle Larry to me.
Oh, I wasn't thinking about Uncle Larry at all.
Uncle Larry's not.
I really just picked this guy up to prop on it.
I like it.
But no, I'm following what you're saying. And here's the thing. If you're properly, as an artist, say you're properly copyrighted, your music's, your work's copyrighted, you know, eventually people that put these videos up there, if the people that represent those big artists don't want them up there, they're going to come off. You know, they will be off of there eventually, you know. If their stuff is properly secured. So, you know, you may have the video on your phone and show it around your house and on your own PC, but like if you start sharing it around some of the big platforms, it's not going to hold. Some artists don't care. They could care. I've been at the fair a bunch of the times when like some of the artists have been like, pull out them cell phones, you know, put your light on, you know, record all of this because this is what I want you to do. Share me everywhere. And I'm like, dang, you know.
It's just a different, there are different ways of looking at
it. Get on auto-tune.
Because you can look at it as somebody stealing your content, but you can also look at it as free marketing.
That's right.
Because, you know, they may put something on their story or on social media that introduces that work to somebody else who was unaware, who otherwise would not have discovered said artist. And then you just gained a fan, a customer, without any,
pulled out my Android. I videoed the entire show and then I shared it all over the internet.
And I've got a record coming out in August.
Oh yeah.
None of that mm-hmm. I just said.
It's no, I heard it,
but I didn't do it. I didn't share it. I didn't video any of the thing. I didn't put it on social media, and I didn't share it.
I mean, your last performance at Porch Fest at my house.
Oh, I'm talking about.
I recorded the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I knew you recorded my set. I was talking about something completely different.
Yeah.
Daniel, you're a sneaky snake on social media and the internet in general.
Yeah, I use it. I use the internet differently. If there's something you post that I don't like, my response will be, to post photographs of snakes under it. But see, but what I'll do is I'll take them off immediately. I'll delete the picture instantly after I put it up. On the rare chance that you get an alert and it says, alert, Daniel posted something here. And you look and it's like, oh no, there's a rattlesnake. And then you go, you're like, what does that mean? And in a few minutes you think about it and you go back and it's no longer there. And you're like, was that really there?
Deja vu.
Was that ever there? This content is gone. Well, what, you just got struck, buddy. I struck you.
See, I like that. I like the mentality. However,
the Mamba.
I do want to encourage Mr. Daniel Sharp to be more active on the streaming platforms and the social media because people need to hear your shit.
Well,
and I know you, but I know you have the mentality that for lack of a better word, again, secretive approach. And whoever gets it, and they should value that and recognize how good it is. I understand that perspective. But, man, you got good shit, and I think people need to hear it.
At the end of the day, you're getting more good shit to more people. That's it's better.
Yeah.
Give us that more good shit to more people is all we want.
I agree.
News and notes. Thank you so much for listening to Porch Talk. If you haven't done so already, rate and review the show. Follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We're there. Keep up with what we have going on. There's pictures and videos to keep up with us. Porch-talk.net. You can go there. Go to the contact page if you would like to pre-order your copy of the Porch Talk vinyl. I only made 300. They're going to go fast. We'll worry about payment when they come in, but if you'll fill out that contact form, let me know who you are. I'll set it aside for you. And we'll do payment when they come in. Now, countylinepodcast.com. You can go there to support Lee. He's got some really cool shirts. Rate and review his show. And guys, that's all I have for you. Peace out. Part 2 coming soon.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.